This is The Way. You're listening to a special edition of This is The Way podcast. It is the Bad Batch Season 2 second half recap. If you're looking for coverage of the first half, episode 109 was released through our channels on Valentine's Day earlier this year. The second half of the show ran from February 15th with episode 9 to the two-episode season finale on March 29th. I know, that's a long time ago. Disney Plus announced that a season 2 was coming before season 1 was finished, so will there be a season 3? Season 1 began on May the 4th, 2021, finished August 13th. Season 2 began January 4th, 2023, and finished March 29th. According to Dave Filoni at the 2023 Star Wars Celebration in London, there will be a season 3, and it will be the last. Both the first and second seasons contain 16 episodes, so I'm going to assume season 3 will also have 16, which will bring the total number to 48 episodes for the series. This podcast episode is going to discuss the events from The Bad Batch episodes 9 through 16 of Season 2.
Maybe you need a refresher course.
Experimental Unit Clone Force 99. The defective clones with the desirable mutations.
First, I'd love to give you some background. The Bad Batch is the nickname given to Experimental Clone Force 99, a group of Jango Fett clones that are a bit different from the regs or regular clones that made up the bulk of the Republic Army during the Clone Wars. Hunter is the apparent leader. He's got keen senses, and as a sergeant, he's the leader of the platoon. Wrecker has great strength, and he's a little bit more reckless, but he's also got a compassionate heart. So he's a big softy. Tech is basically the brains of the outfit. He's got enhanced intelligence and analytical mind. And let me mention now, if you have not seen these episodes that we're going to be discussing, we will indeed speak about all plot and character developments. So if you indeed have seen the season, you know why I'm bringing that up right now. Crosshair, CT-9904, has enhanced eyesight. And as the name suggests, he's an excellent marksman, but he turned on the crew. He abandoned the Bad Batch to remain faithful and loyal to the Empire. A late addition to the crew was Echo, a former regular commando who was captured and enhanced by the Techno Union with some cybernetic implants. He was captured during the Clone Wars, and then he was rescued, and then he uses his cybernetic capabilities to assist his new team. Before he was captured, he was designated CT-1409, and then due to his bravery, he was promoted to the 501st Legion. He leaves the Bad Batch to join Rex in assisting former clone troopers at the end of the first half of Season 2. So just last episode, Episode 8, he left the team, but he'll be back this second season. Rounding out the crew was an addition of a sister clone, Omega. She, as it turns out, was a female unaltered clone, just like Boba Fett was a male unaltered clone. Her existence was kept hidden from us before the events of the show because Nala Se wanted to use her genetic code for experimentation. Ah, the best intentions of scientists, right?
Omega is a pure genetic replication. A male clone, codenamed Alpha, later referred to as Boba. Since he disappeared at the start of the war, that makes Omega the sole living source of Fett's raw genetic material.
Is she the only unaltered clone that is a female? Is she the only female unaltered clone? Reveals are going to have to wait. Okay, so those are the members we follow in the show. Season 2 brings us in contact with new threats, new allies, as Clone Force 99 goes on missions and adventures. They even try settling down and finding a home for clones. All right, that's plenty of background and setup, so let's get to the second half of the second season of The Bad Batch.
They call themselves The Bad Batch.
Episode 9, The Crossing, released February 15th, 2023. This is the first episode since Echo's departure from the team, and some of the first half of the episode is spent dealing with that information. The group, the Bad Batch, is sent by Sid to investigate an Ipsium mine, and this half of the season seems committed to following through on a really weak first half promise by a thug not to trust Sid.
Hey, you three. You could have walked away. That loyalty is admirable. But with Sid, it doesn't always go both ways. Watch your backs.
It's also, I think, designed to further show us how the stoic Tech character is capable of emotional growth, and it's designed for a payoff in the season finale. This episode doesn't really deliver on suspense or interest.
In its raw state, the mineral is highly combustible, like a primed thermal detonator.
Sounds dangerous. I like it.
I know I just talked about it, but I want to stress, this is my opinion. So if you're listening, you're probably interested to hear someone talk about the show. And so I am giving you my interpretation of these episodes. So while it doesn't hit for me, maybe it does for you, but I'll get back to the show. All right, so this mineral, Ipsium, it's in low supply for reasons we don't find out in the episode. And so much of the episode seems designed solely for the development of a relationship between Tech and Omega. They get trapped in the mine together. They escape together. The way this mineral is extracted felt ridiculous to me, even for Star Wars. I don't need everything to make perfect sense. And if this was a video podcast, I'd be making a lot more sense to you right now because I'd have shown you what I mean.
Are you aware that you are surrounded by enough Ipsium that if not handled correctly, could take down this entire cavern?
Then you better not distract me.
But this Ipsium, it's in rock. It's supposedly very volatile, just like coaxium, but they collect it with what looks like plunging a syringe being put into rock to extract this. Okay, if you love the show, you probably enjoyed the heart-to-heart talks between Tech and Omega, and something like this won't bother you. This was undoubtedly more like character development, but this is the first of the last 8 episodes of the whole season there. And at the time, I don't think we really knew there was going to be a third season. But my honest opinion is the development and the storytelling is just not done well here. The team gets out of the predicament. They lose their ship. And so somebody steals it. They should have absolutely no hope of ever getting it back. But it's a show, right? And it's an animated show. So that's not what happens. At the end of this episode, they stumble across a seemingly abandoned spaceport. Well, great luck for them. They went looking for Ipsium and found only themselves. And yes, I'm aware of the irony that's inherent in the Latin language with Ipsum and Ipsium. They made contact with Sid. She won't help. So it's up to the Bad Batch to help themselves. And that's where we end episode 9.
Give me a few days and I'll see what I can do.
We don't have enough rations to last a few.
What do we do now?
We'll figure it out, like we always do.
Season 2, Episode 10, Retrieval, released on February 22nd, features, well, if I'm honest, none of the work of that episode seemed necessary for them to have gone through it to get to this episode. So this features basically like the second half of a two-parter, but I don't even think the first part was really necessary. Everything could have been managed with being confronted by the thieves on their way to the mine. So you could have really condensed the first half. And I know they're trying to set up that relationship. But, you know, this isn't a standalone episode. It's not even really a new mission. I mean, this could stand on its own But then you'd wonder, well, how'd they get to this, you know, planet? This is so much like an Oliver Twist episode or an Oliver Twist translation that it just made me hate everything about this episode. The Starship Thief, Benny, he is terribly written. I'll say even terribly performed.
Marco, it's Benny.
You're late, kid.
My scouting run took longer than expected, but I found something you're going to like.
And I guess you can't help. The writing's so bad, they needed to make this Mako, the bad guy of the episode, they needed to make him both ugly, and then they had to include a scene where he's gorging himself on food, because that was the signal to you, and me, as the viewer, we're not supposed to agree with him. The MacGuffin of this episode, a gonk droid, really was a lame solution to the problem of how to find this lost ship, and the problem I always have with animated series is made evident in this episode. Plot holes get produced because you can simply do anything you want, and you can make up anything if it's animated. You don't have any limitations, and that really, I mean, you know, necessity being the mother of invention sometimes, a show like Andor wouldn't suffer from this because the writing staff would see it on screen or see it developing, and then they would close that loop. But animators, they can simply tell the story however they want, and then it can be drawn that way, no matter how ridiculous it is. The Bad Batch enact this plan to get back their ship that's in the process of being dismantled, so they're taking apart the ship to sell it piece by piece. I don't know how they can get all the parts back like this, but and have a fully functioning ship, but they're going to also overthrow Mako in the process. The thieves, they're basically children that would likely not have survived without someone's help, and in this case, it's Mako. So without his help or leadership, you know, they would not survive, but he's got to die a villain's death, right? Because that's what's called for in the show. In classic form, he's going to lose his grip while he's trying to pull down someone else who's trying to save him, and he falls into a molten chasm. Yes, falling deaths don't tend to be the end. I mean, even the Emperor who died from, I don't know how he died or how his physical body was destroyed in the Death Star, but falling deaths, Darth Maul, the Emperor, it doesn't mean that there's an end. And that, if you know what happens later in the season, you know why I'm bringing that up now. But I think Mako's gone. And good riddance, really. The less we say about this episode, the better, I think. And so all the kids now are free. Omega even tells them, you can be whatever you want to be, and you don't have to just keep mining. But honestly, these kids have only been brought up stealing and mining, and they're probably not that good at either. And they're probably going to be even less efficient if they're not under the leadership of someone who keeps them in line. So in reality here, these liberators, the Bad Batch, leave these kids to their own means. So they just liberated them from one threat. And now, so someone's got to come and take this shipment of Ipsium that they're mining, right? A new problem is undoubtedly going to present itself. The first time someone comes for a shipment of this Ipsium, because surely Mako's not dealing with reputable sources. So they're just going to take over and either kill or, you know, enslave the children again. The first two episodes of the second half might be worse than Clone Wars episodes involving the Martez sisters to me. And boy, do I dislike those characters. But let's get through the retrieval so we can get on to what's actually a pretty good episode.
You never should have crossed me, kid.
Metamorphosis is episode 11, released March 1st, the same day as the debut of season 3 of The Mandalorian. And I know, I just ripped apart the first two episodes of the second half, but this episode was so much better. It comes on the downward slope to the end of season 2. And it's quite obvious, the writing staff wants to keep this ball rolling against Sid. But this is the episode we meet Jimmy Simpson's Dr. Hemlock. Someone introduced in this show who has to serve as the big bad since we can't meet Thrawn just yet. Not only that, but we get a Zillow beast, and we get the first meeting of Emery Carr. A word on that, too. I don't think there's a single person who missed that the actress who voices Omega voices Carr as well. It's obvious. So the eventual reveal in the final moments of the season has almost no impact when you consider that. This episode was still a much more enjoyable watch than the previous two. Even though horror is not my favorite genre, it felt a little like Alien in the opening with the clone commandos and the ship. There was enough suspense, and there was enough to pique my interest. We get to see Nala Se hasn't been forgotten. Planet Wayland is still a factor in the series arc. The threads revealed to the Bad Batch in this episode are done in a much more solid style. The writing's better. There's also sensible reveals of the plans of the Empire to us, the viewers, through good exposition and good action.
Did any of the villagers see the Zillow?
Several. The locals have been detained and will be dealt with. However, one vessel escaped our assault. It was a military class shuttle.
Find out who it was.
Yes, sir.
The chilling way the villagers who witnessed the attack of the beast are going to meet their end, well, that's not shown, right? You don't have to show everything like that, but because it's inferred and because it's done in a good way, and likewise the way Lama Su misinterprets what the reason was that he was brought to Nala Se, they spin that so that we're right along for these reveals. Hemlock doesn't want Omega for genetic material. He wants to torture her as motivation.
There is a particular clone you must locate, a young girl. She is the key to controlling Nala Se.
How very interesting. It seems we have much to discuss.
To me, this is an example of an episode you didn't necessarily need to have to advance the Bad Batch's story, but it advances the season plot story, and it does so in such a good way, it stands out in stark contrast to the way the storytelling was done in the first two episodes of the second half. So Metamorphosis was a much better episode and a much more enjoyable watch, which was a good thing because the really exciting thing that day that the episode came out was the first episode of season 3 of The Mandalorian.
You think?
Moving on to episode 12, The Outpost. That came out on March 8th, the day the second episode of Mandalorian season 3 came out. So we're back to Crosshair and another terrific episode. Even a good soldier that follows order, or maybe especially a good soldier following orders, can't help but see why the Empire is on the wrong side of galactic history. Lieutenant Nolan is the right red shirt for the job in this episode. We instantly hate him. We don't need to hear a lot of backstory about him, but Crosshair gets to witness the hopelessness and the pointlessness of orders that clone troopers have to face now that the Clone Wars are over. The events of the episode are almost meaningless, and almost just as meaningless as that war. The clone trooper that bonds with Crosshair, Mayday, he's treated just like the pieces of equipment that they all don't realize that they're guarding and trying to capture back.
Did you get lost?
We work on the Empire's schedule, trooper, not yours.
It's Commander, Lieutenant.
Well, Commander, your orders were to guard and protect this facility and its cargo. Yet this outpost is grossly unguarded. Where are the rest of your men?
Dead.
Raiders have been stealing equipment, and the clone troopers could have been using some of that equipment, but they had to do without. It's just inventory on a sheet to this Nolan, and when Crosshair and Mayday approach, Crosshair is pleading for a medic for his friend, or his, brother in arms. It's all laid bare for us in that scene. Nolan doesn't want to waste resources on what he considers an expendable trooper. Crosshair finally gets it. He's exhausted. Mayday dies without getting help, but so does Nolan. Crosshair shoots him when Nolan scolds him for disrespecting a superior. So it's like, not only do you have to take it, but take it and shut up.
Lieutenant.
He falls unconscious, Crosshair does, and then he wakes up to Emery Carr, who puts him right back to sleep. This is to show us he's still on the chessboard, right? I mean, he shoots a commanding officer, but they capture him. They take him to Tantus, and that's a setup for the season finale. He's going to heal, and then he's probably going to be subjected to experiments or killed if he doesn't cooperate.
Remain calm. Cooperate, and you might survive.
Okay. Two bad ones, two good ones. What about episode 13? Pabu, released on the same day as the third episode of season 3 of The Mandalorian, March 15th. The Ides of March also. It was the season 3 debut for Ted Lasso, so there was a lot going on in TV. And what was Pabu, we wondered? What did it refer to? Well, we knew the title before the season started. So what did it mean? I'm going to be honest here. I really was going to just skip this episode and pretend that I missed it in the recap. In my opinion, it is skippable. First, it features a lot of Fee Genoa, and I'm not a fan in the slightest of Wanda Sykes, but she's not the problem with the episode, believe it or not. So they liberate some artifact, and wouldn't you know it, we've got it all wrong about Genoa. She's a good pirate. She brings her treasure to an island on a beach world, and it would be a good place for the Bad Batch to lay low and settle down. That's it. That's the point of the episode. You can make an argument that that's important. And sure, there's a tidal wave that happens, so there are some stakes, but if you want a deeper message, it's that you can never be comfortable even when you think you've found paradise. And I mean, Sid threatens them almost outright in a message, sure, but the actual tidal wave is the thing that is the problem in this episode. It's the challenge to overcome. It wipes out the lower half of this island, but the upper half is saved because it's revealed to be a long dormant safety feature. So some of the people on the ground are not going to make it, but the people higher up won't suffer as much. So, you know, not a very subtle message. You know, the little people are going to suffer and the higher ups are going to be all right. I do remind myself that Lucasfilm claims this is a show for children, but that's not how they always market or treat the Star Wars story matter. Andor is not for children, right? We just get reminded of that, oh, it's for kids, when someone tries to hold Disney and Lucasfilm accountable for bad writing, bad plot direction, canon adherence. Again, this is an episode you can skip if you want. You're not going to miss anything.
A little stability might do you all some good.
Episode 14, Tipping Point. Not the book by Malcolm Gladwell, but the last episode before the two-part season finale. It had a release date of March 22nd, same day as the fourth episode of season 3 of The Mandalorian. I was serious about being able to skip that last episode. Even though the island appears briefly in this one, and that would have made it a little bit tough to understand what was going on. Well, this one is better, but it was hard not to be, in my opinion. If for no other reason, this episode is faster paced.
Fireball, prep the leech vessel. We need to board and recover those prisoners before reinforcements show up.
It opens with the return of Echo as he's part of this raid on a prison transfer shuttle that is taking clone troopers, who are prisoners, to Mount Tantus. The good guys will find out all that information later in the episode, but this is a piece of the puzzle that we need to show us Echo and Rex and Gregor and the growing group of rebellious clones. They're uncovering little bits and pieces simply by choosing to resist. I can't help but imagine that the plan by Lucasfilm is for season 3 to start tying in elements of Andor And also showing how things get set up for Rebels as well. You know, Andor and Rebels, they are adjacent, they're parallel, but they're not really intersecting. The Bad Batch may be the line that intersects both, or maybe something else will. So from the raid on the ship, the story will end up shifting to Hemlock interrogating Crosshair. He wants to know, where are your rebellious brothers and sister?
You're wasting your time. They'll never turn her over.
They don't have a choice. She is a clone, and therefore Imperial property. Help me locate your former squad, and you will have your freedom.
I don't know where they are.
It's word of the raid that postpones Hemlock's torture with the same kind of hovering droid that we were introduced to by Vader in A New Hope when he brought it into Leia's Death Star detention cell. An interrogation droid.
Let's see if we can jog your memory. Begin.
One of our transport ships was attacked, departing Balmora. The prisoners aboard escaped.
The story then shifts to Coruscant. Echo heads to the Martez Motor Shop for a secret rendezvous, not with them, with Senator Roy Chuchi? Senator Chuchi? She says she's going to look into it. Meanwhile, Crosshair attempts to escape. He manages to get to a communication station and tries sending a message and a warning to his brothers of the Bad Batch.
Plan 88.
An unauthorized outgoing transmission is being sent from Terminal 3. Sever that connection and seal the room.
You have to hide. They're after Hope.
At the same time, Echo tracks down the Bad Batch on Pabu. Everyone's excited to see him, especially Omega, who's been getting flying lessons from Tech, but she really wants to see. She had a real hard time letting Echo go. And I guess she has to learn how to fly from someone, but I feel like it took a long time for us to be told that Tech's the one to do this. Knowing what we know about the finale, this feels even more forced to me. Hemlock is forced to explain himself to none other than Wilhulf Tarkin. At this point, he is still just one of many people jockeying for position as the Emperor's second favorite behind Vader. The Bad Batch is still not aware of the situation involving Crosshair. They have to wrestle with either enjoying life on Pabu beyond the reach of Sid and the Empire for now, or do they get involved again? The Echo comes to them and says, hey, this is happening. They don't know about Crosshair yet. But before there's really a chance to think deeply on it or to make a final decision, Tech uncovers the link between the data Echo got from the raid on the prison ship and Crosshair. I think it would have meant a little bit more if they made a decision to not join Echo. And then they find this information out and then they have to scramble to try to go back on that decision, right? Prisoners are being transferred. Clone troopers are defying the Empire. And Crosshair, they find out, was one of them. This surprises the crew. Tech further reveals he was able to find this message sent by Crosshair. Now, is this a legit call for help or a warning? Or is it just a trap?
It's a trap!
We, the audience, know the answer because we saw it. We see it. And we see it play out. Because Crosshair's torture is continued gleefully by Hemlock.
Increase his injection level this time. Let's see how long until you break.
Two episodes to go. Episode 15, the first of those, is The Summit. The penultimate episode, streaming March 29th, the same day as Episode 5 of The Mandalorian Season 3. Even before this season started, I think looking at the title, The Summit, made most of Season 1's watchers suspect that this was a reference to Mount Tantus from the first season. It's kind of got a double meaning, though. It's a summit of a mountain, Raven's Peak, But it's also a summit of the people who are meaning, you know, the, well, we'll talk about those officers in the Imperial ranks. So I think we suspect that things are going to tie back to Nala Se and the cloning facility. You know, was there going to be a Last of Us style ending where Omega is going to set up herself as a sacrifice for the greater good of the clones? Tech, for all the information that he figured out last episode, can't figure out where the prisoners are being taken and housed. Echo somehow knows there's this secret meeting that will be taking place, a summit, on Eriadu at Governor Tarkin's compound. So the planet is to go to Eriadu, do some stuff, try to find their brother Crosshair, even if it is a trap. They land on the planet using a stolen code, very much in line with how Star Wars does things, and they come up with a plan to take a ride on a cable rail car, and everything is working. This meeting features some new and old, classic and modern Star Wars villains. There's Tarkin, of course.
Dr. Hemlock, what do you have to report on your advanced science division?
Then there's Hirsch Ramadi, who was in live action in the Rogue One movie. Basically, he was the lackey to Tarkin. Hemlock attends, so he's another one, and he gives an update on cloning. He pretty much indicates he's going to treat the clones like Imperial property and experiment on them. Barton Coburn is also attending the meeting. He was a Clone Wars officer that served Tarkin and Jedi Evan Piel from the Citadel on Lola Sayu in Season 3. He saved them in that episode, or he was part of the team that saved them. But I think his inclusion is simply because he served under Jedi Master Plo Koon, who is, of course, a Dave Filoni favorite. Also in attendance, though, Director Orson Krennic.
Now, Commander Krennic, enlighten us to the status of Project Stardust.
Yes, Governor Tarkin.
The Bad Batch manages to track down the correct shuttle to plant a homing beacon on board to track Hemlock to the location of the clone prisoners. Unfortunately, it's not the only operation going on inside Tarkin's not-so-secret base. Saw Gerrera is there, and his team is planning on bombing the meeting and taking out some officers. The Bad Batch tries to plead with him to get him to, you know, let us get some information. We're going to save more clones. Gerrera is not really willing to give up this opportunity to cause some damage to the Imperial officer hierarchy. The Bad Batch reasons, hey, someone's always going to go to fill that void.
You are wiping out any chance to gather intel that could help your cause.
Taking out several of their top commanders is a good start.
Well, that victory will be short-lived, as their ranks will quickly be replenished.
Maybe so. But sacrifices have to be made for the greater good.
We have to go now.
The Bad Batch flee to the cable car, Gerrera goes to his shuttle, and they both fight their way out. Once they're discovered, Gerrera manages to set off the blast, but Tarkin and the officers are safe inside a sealed conference room. The power, though, goes down on the cable car. And they're stuck. And that sets up the perilous finale.
This is going to be a problem.
Episode 16, Plan 99, the Season 2 finale, released the same day as Episode 15, March 29th. Before the season, I wondered if this was going to recall any of the activity of the Clone Wars episodes, the ARC Troopers and Clone Cadets. I'm glad there are stakes in this episode. But I still think it feels cheap. It doesn't feel like there was always a plan from the beginning of the show for this to happen. It feels instead set up maybe even partway through the second season. And I'm not sure it was done very well either. This is indeed where Tech meets his end, falling from a high place. Or does he meet his end? Again, Darth Maul, the Emperor, Mako might not be... We never see a body, but we do see his goggles later, but that could be a trick. So what if he's getting a back to bath in the Mount Tantus clone facility and day spa?
No way.
I'll admit the action is about as good as you can get from animation, meaning that even with the high stakes, it still feels like low stakes, but at least it's fast paced. The escape from Eriadu is definitely punctuated with this apparent death of Tech, and then there's some good use of sound from the point of view of Omega, like a little bit of the ringing in the ears of an explosion, the quiet, the stillness, and the muffled sounds. I thought that was an effective way to deal with what could be emotional for some viewers, not for me, but could be for some. Now, why the team chooses to go to this medic droid that Sid is looking after, and they don't head to Pabu, that it's only weakly explained by suggesting or inferring this droid, AZI-3, is the only one who can save her. It's the same one who helped discover inhibitor chips, and it escaped to Poca City with the Bad Batch, only to end up in Sid's employ. And surprise, Sid betrays them. Why? Just because they had to do it, because they set it up poorly in the first half of the season with that one line from that one thug. I mean, the reason is because the story team wants it that way, but there wasn't going to be a reason for Hemlock to find them, so they needed to make that happen. The only reason given, Sid says they're bad for business. There's really no other reason for her to betray them, especially to the Empire, there was no setup, no proof to us that they're breathing down her necks, or even suspicious that she's harboring them. There is some back and forth with Wrecker being captured, then Hunter tries to make sure that Omega escapes, so he gives himself up, but...
I won't let them take you!
How about an exchange? If you come with me, your friends will live.
I don't believe you.
I did not come here for them, Omega. I came to return you to Nala Se.
She's a kid. She wants to save her brothers. She's naive. She's not smart enough to realize nothing she can do to Hemlock or any of them is going to stop him. But it does give this commando, Scorch, enough time to sneak up and stun her. I think he's from the Commandos game.
Omega, look out! Scour the city. When you find the third clone, send them back to Iriadu. Governor Tarkin wishes to question you personally.
Now, they're almost all captured, but we need somebody to come through and save them, right? So it's Echo, and Hemlock wants the set, but the medic droid runs or floats and finds Echo, who is conveniently away for this plot point to happen, and then he comes in with an AT-AC. He rescues Wrecker and Hunter, but not Omega. Hemlock flies off with her, and there's no way for them to track her. So Tech is gone, so they can't track her with his help, and then we see, indeed, Hemlock takes Omega to Tantus. That's where the worst-kept reveal of the season ends up playing out. Wouldn't you know it, the actress who voices both Omega and Emery Carr is doing it because Carr is a clone to Omega's sister. Okay, some final thoughts. I don't dislike the Bad Batch. Dee Bradley Baker does a great job of making his voices distinct for the most part. I still don't think we need to see much more from this group. Not because it hasn't been done well all the time, or that it's never, ever enjoyable. I mean, it is sometimes. The time this group is operating is very limiting. We don't see or hear about them in Obi-Wan Kenobi, Rebels, Rogue One, Andor, yet. Will a reference be made in Ahsoka? Not likely. And whose fault is that? Well, I mean, these guys are the ones that are writing all these stories and coming up with all the stories. They could put these little seeds in there, but they don't. And if they did too much of it, we'd probably complain that they're doing too much of it. There's nothing affecting canon in such a momentous way that this series feels important, but the minor confirmations and connections do end up feeling like the big takeaways for me, rather than any kind of storytelling. Like, the good episodes feel better because the bad episodes are so bad. I just don't think animation ever will carry the same weight, either in effect of the story or in how much I will count it as canon, actually, you know, something that actually happens in the Star Wars universe that I enjoy watching. I admit, the well-done episodes stand out, but again, probably because I'm holding it to a lower standard. Maybe also, it's against ones that even fans of the show specifically would consider weak. You know, even if you're a fan, some of these episodes, you got it. I mean, if you're honest, they're not well done. Some people in the Star Wars Twitter community, though, treat that kind of analysis of the shows like if I merely mention it, it's enough to disqualify me or someone else as a fan. But as I get older, I enjoy discussing that less and less with those kinds of people. Star Wars is increasingly not just being made for people that are not like-minded to me, but it's specifically being made to signal to people like me, I'm not welcome as a fan. In the first half of the season, there was an episode, Faster. Supposedly, it sets up Tech as being some great pilot. Except, Riot Racing and escape pods aren't even close to being the same things. But that's the kind of tenuous thread that supposedly lends importance to this episode. And, oh, you know, that's why he's such a great pilot. It's so weak. Even more ridiculous is that it's set up by a line that any other character could have offered. And I'll point out, even Fee Genoa would have made more sense revealing that Sid was untrustworthy in that same episode. But I just don't think poor writing has an excuse when you say you're going to count everything you do as canon. Supposedly, you know, by treating everything as canon, it elevates this animation. It's artificial. Star Wars may have been made for kids in the late 70s and 80s, but it wasn't animated right off the bat. It was a movie first, then they had that animated portions of a holiday special. But you can't make Star Wars for the kids of today and have that be interesting to both the adults that were kids back then or adults that were adults back then even, when the original trilogy was fresh and new in pop culture. I am an advocate for more Star Wars content. That does include making animated shows. And, you know, I'm not a kid, but I can enjoy Star Wars still. It can even be campy and silly and still be enjoyable. But it has to be good. You can't just make anything. And then when the writing's poor and the story choices are just don't make sense, and say, well, it's not made for you. But then, also, that's not just what's happening. People are saying, I'm a bad fan for not liking it. I'm not going to like everything, but I can dislike parts of it and still think the rest of it is well made. For the show The Bad Batch, there probably could have been a lot less episodes in season 1 and season 2. The stories I want to see are ones that tie up loose threads from the Clone Wars, connect the prequel trilogy to the sequels. You can still introduce new characters and new places, you know, but I want this to feel more like a live action interlude, something that's going to reveal lore in a small but significant way so that it relates to the Star Wars that I already know and the stuff that I love, like Andor. I don't want the Force explained. I don't want them translating Indiana Jones stuff into the Star Wars universe. You know, some people like Dr. Aphra comics. I don't want to see Indiana Jones in Star Wars. I want to see Indiana Jones in Indiana Jones, but maybe not even after the last Indiana Jones movie. I want to see Star Wars in Star Wars. You can have elements of that from time to time, but then make it good. I don't need comic book storylines introduced or characters from novels popping up. Look at what Marvel is suffering from. I want to be entertained. And the worst way to do that is to cause me, while I'm watching an animated show, cause me to question the motives behind an episode that introduces something new and exciting to Star Wars. Maybe worse than that is make me suspect modern politics are playing a part. Because Disney and Lucasfilm's stated political opinions are just plain wrong. I want good writing, better than I'm getting from The Bad Batch Season 2. And it's getting a third season eventually. I assume the strikes in Hollywood are not going to shut things down permanently. I'm going with a new mantra for Star Wars content. If it's cool, it rules. If it's bad, I'm going to be sad. I think the stories being told are getting more contrived. and convoluted. You don't need to fit the poorly done movies. I think a good thing to do is to shift away from the sequels. Whether or not they have an attachment to them, they weren't as well received as the earlier stuff. So shift your focus to what works. Whether or not you agree with why people don't like them, some people do, but they're still divisive, right? Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker are divisive, so stay away from them. Ironically, even those movies, as bad as I feel they were, are more important to canon, to Star Wars, than even these animated shows. And you have to accept that as well. The actual events being related to us end up getting filtered in my eye through an eye of the beholder, or, well, I'll just say it, from a certain point of view. It never feels as real as even seeing Grogu and Din Djarin on Mandalore. Yeah, even with the way season 3 of The Mandalorian turned out.
The Foundlings are the future. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
I could go on, and I know I don't always make that much sense. I kind of ramble, and I get on these tangents, but I didn't very much care for season 2 as a whole. There were some bright spots, I thought, but bright relative to the dark spots, the parts where I thought they just really missed the point, really missed an opportunity. But maybe you want to hear what I thought about the first half of the season, and if you do, that was posted way, way back. And again, I apologize for taking so long to get the second half done, but as you can hear, I've been trying to limit my negativity when talking about Star Wars. I know it's not as enjoyable to listen to, but facts are facts. My opinion is my opinion, and I know what I saw. So you can go back for recaps and discussions about season 2. You can go back for season 3 of The Mandalorian, which was probably my most recent original content. I know I had, like, May the 4th, I had a special episode, and there were two more animated series to Disney Plus, neither of which I've had the desire to watch, and I'm not even going to pretend that I haven't had the time, but Star Wars Visions Volume 2, I hear, has some great episodes. Haven't wanted to see it. Because I know that when I see it, I'm going to want to produce content, and I want that to be positive. And Ahsoka has got me really excited. Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures animated TV series, that's out there, but I've seen a little bit of it through Disney Plus and through my kids, you know, with watching cartoons. Doesn't interest me at all. But we will see the Ahsoka series coming in late August. Skeleton Crew and the Acolyte, they may end up suffering greatly because of the striking. We don't know what's going to end up happening. Disney may end up translating some harsh lessons from the lack of success that Marvel content is having. They may translate that to Star Wars and then spread things out even more than they already have. So I know the second season of Andor was shooting and then striking interrupted that. Ahsoka is done, but are they going to air it when they said they're going to air it? We'll have to wait and see. But this episode was about The Bad Batch Season 2, and that's already in the book. So sometime they promise a Season 3 that's going to tie even more together for us, and we will absolutely cover that in probably the same way that we did Season 1 and Season 2. Send us feedback on today's episode or the podcast in general. Twitter or X, whatever people are calling it, at This Is The Way Pod. Email thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. We're going to get to work on our next podcast episode very soon. Probably have a brief news update thanks to the strikes. But thanks for joining me for this discussion about The Bad Batch Season 2's last 8 episodes, the second half of Season 2. I'm the podcast creator and host, Steve Lascalzo. This is The Way, and may the Force be with you always.